Off the Ball Rugby.
With Lachman and the two young wingers, and then you got Stuart McCluskey. These guys have sort of said, I've dreamt about this. I've always wanted to play at Twickenham. I don't know if I'm going to get another chance, but I'm taking it. I am not letting this day go. I'm grabbing this mongrel by the throat.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 00.
You are very welcome along to the latest episode of Settle In, and I'm delighted to say that I am joined by Chris McDermott and Neil Hoey, who are both part of the Irish amputee football team. Guys, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Tell us, how did this whole thing start up?
I think it started 2011, 2012, so long before my involvement. But a number of people, Simon Baker, Christy McGalligan, and you know, legends of our game, kind of got together and saw that this was a growing sport around Europe, and started recruiting at the time. And it's really gone from strength to strength from there to the stage that we're now competing in European Championships and World Cups. So it's come a long way in a short space of time. But yeah, sort of started here around about then. I think globally it's going maybe about 50 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And for people who have never watched the sport before, how is it similar and how does it differ from a traditional 11-a-side football?
I think the biggest difference is the outfield players all have either one leg or a leg deformity and play on the crutches here. Our goalkeepers then only have one arm, or again, an arm deficiency. They're not allowed to leave their box. And the biggest difference then as well is we're a 7-a-side game instead of an 11-a-side game. There's a few other differences, things like sideline balls and stuff, but the overall is it's the crutches for outfield players, and that's how we move around and that's how we get around.
And are the minutes the same?
The minutes are 25 minutes and a half, 50-minute game then. But we could, unlike international games, we could have two or three of our international games in a day, depending on the tournament we're at, so it can be full on.
And how did you get involved with it first?
So I actually got involved back in 2011 when it was kind of starting up. They used to train up in Ballymun United and a bit out in Mountview in Blanchetown. I had only just lost my leg, so we met one of the previous amputee footballers there, Paul. And when I was in having an appointment for my leg, and we met Paul up there. He basically talked us through it a bit, and it turned out that one of the other guys who helped settle up, Kevin Brady, lives at the end of my road. He was friends with Christy at the time, and so he was talking to Mum and Dad about it at the same time. So we went up one day to Ballymun to just try and see what it was like, what was it about. And from the first day we went up, I just loved it. It was exactly what I wanted as a young lad playing sports. It was physical, it was fast-paced, it was, you know, it wasn't just a kind of kick about of a ball, it was football. It was as normal football as you can have in that sense.
And was that team, when you first started out, was that like a club setup rather than the international side now, or was it still the international setup?
It was set up first, actually, the international side.
Okay.
The club football only came in the last kind of recent years, really 2018, I want to say.
2018, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about you? How did you first get involved with it?
By absolute chance. Again, a lot of the recruitment is often by chance. But I suppose my background, I had studied in Wales and I worked in disability football over there. And pretty much every disability-specific football, apart from amputee football, I came back home and wanted to work in the sport industry here. And I was looking to get around and see how the sporting landscape was and do a little bit of networking. And I went to a couple of grassroots courses and I bumped into James Conroy, who's actually the captain of the team now. And he had invited me down to a training session in Limerick. So they had moved down to there at that point in 2017, and then never really went back to it after that point until the following year. I moved down to Cork. I was working for the FAI in Cork City on a project, and the league had just started up, and the person who was coaching at the team at the time, Ronan Collins, moved on to the women's team there, and I just stepped into the breach. And I suppose I've been in and out at different times since, and it's kind of like the Hotel California. You kind of, you can any time you like, but you're in for good. And I've had a number of different roles and as a player and as a coach since being involved. So I'm in for life now, I think.
And do you have a preference between the playing or the coaching side of things?
I've probably leaned more towards the coaching. Probably by default, there's four really good goalkeepers that are in the international side, so those that can't do, teach me. I've had a good taste of actually playing as a goalkeeper. I got to play with Cork City and go to a Champions League with them because the game's actually played at that level now in Europe. There's a number of national leagues that play every year in a Champions League, and enjoyed that. And it's a nice perspective to have going back into the coaching role as well. But yeah, kind of rocking between one and the other at times.
No harm. I mean, it's good to get all sides of these things. And Neil, so what does the landscape look like at the moment for Irish amputee football in Ireland?
We only just came back there recently from our Nations League. We were over in Spain and we were competing against France, Spain, Georgia. France, Spain, Georgia.
It wouldn't be an Irish team if we didn't meet Georgia in an international competition.
No, it wouldn't be. In fairness, we're only back from that. That was leading into now hopefully going to a World Cup next year in Costa Rica. But there's a lot of things in the background as well with club football that are still taking shape. As Chris mentioned, the club football side of things is kind of new enough over here. So that's still, I'd say, the kind of grassroots, but Chris will be able to talk better about that. The international side, it's still going. We're always recruiting players. We're always wanting to get new players in, and you know, we're always trying to expand that. So,
and how does the international scene look in the sense that, you know, if you're looking at the teams that we have at the moment, you know, you meet up for camps every couple of months in between the club game, you go to the international, you were talking about playing in the Nations League, World Cup, so like the tournaments are obviously very similar, but is it the same sort of thing where there are international windows, or is it a bit more consistent?
It kind of is and isn't. I think in terms of our own training on the international side, we might do a day in Abbottstown once a month, but you're expected to do your own training outside. Let the clubs all meet up to do their own training because everyone's travelling from, like, we've lads travelling from Donegal, from Cork, different areas of Ireland. It's very much kind of everyone is responsible for their own, but the lads in Cork all meet up with each other and try and get in their weekly sessions. You know, the lads in Dublin have a weekly Wednesday night session where we go to, and it is expected that everyone is doing their own bit outside of that then. So most of the lads are doing 3 to 5 sessions a week, depending on what's coming up at a weekend or, you know, with that month, depending on the calendars and stuff like that. So it is, it's full on, it is intense, and it's a big element of responsibility on yourself. Like, if you want to be a part of it, you're doing your own training outside of it. But the international is there. There's certain times where it might be a night away for the weekend camps, or maybe it's 2 nights. Again, it depends on kind of what tournaments are coming up and what players' availability are like.
And what does an average training session look like?
Well, that would be better for Chris to answer. Open kick the ball. So.
No, no.
I suppose where we are at the moment with the National League, it's really sort of been able to give players that week-to-week training schedule. They might only meet once as a group, but that local level of having that anchor and that accountability, because a lot of, you know, amputee football and training is quite individually, but there's the support structures around it to be able to get out quite regularly. So when players are coming in, they're coming in quite fit, they're ready for competition, or they're ready for the training sessions that we have on. A weekend training session might be broken down into like tactical type sessions. If we're quite close to a competition, we might be looking at France, Georgia, Spain, Germany, how they play, and developing our principles of play, how we're going to lead into a competition. But there's, you know, we have parallel sessions that run alongside it as well. So it's not all just about the international team. We also have an academy and we have a development group, and they kind of run parallel to each other at the moment. So there's people at different stages of the journey. So we'll have players like Neil and all our other international players working towards a competition. They're coming in much fitter because of the National League programme. But we have new players that are from 5 to 16, 17 years of age that are in our academy. That's grown a little bit recently. There's always much more room for that. But they'll train alongside, and they can see the senior international players. They look up to them quite literally, but also, you know, it's the role models, and they want to be. And Neil would have come through a very similar sort of pathway as that of seeing senior players. We also get not as often as we'd like, but we also get new players that kind of come through at an older age or maybe a transition from the academy, and they're in that development side. So we kind of run a lot of that parallel on our training weekends. So there's a different stage, age and stage for everybody that might qualify or is interested, and there's a unique sort of support structure, whether it's to be able to participate in a high level competition or to be able to get to the next stage, or even just the support for parents.
It sounds like quite a wide reaching program that's running at the moment, considering, as you guys said, that this has only really properly started developing since 2011.
It certainly is, and you know, if we're looking at the international stuff, you know, like any other Irish team, we punch well above our weight. You know, we finished sixth in Europe. We're going to our fourth World Cup in a row.
Four, I think.
Yeah, which is quite good. And you know,
international tournaments are hard to come across in Irish football sometimes, so it's very good.
Yeah. And we want to kind of consistently keep doing that. And you know, obviously players get a little bit older, they have families and kind of drop out of sport and things like that. And the biggest challenge that we have is trying to keep that momentum going, because we're a small population compared to some of the teams we come across in Europe. But we keep staying in there and we keep surviving. So the big challenges that we have is people knowing that we're here, knowing that they actually qualify, and knowing that it's a little bit more meaningful than maybe what they might think it is. You know, you come along to a training session that Neil's participating in, it's not a coffee morning for amputees. You know, it's blood and thunder, and it's competitive, and people have a desire to win, and you know, push themselves going on to international tournaments. But you know, at the same time, there's still good support structures around people that are on the development pathway.
And if someone is listening to this and wanting to get involved, or wondering if they're qualified, or had just what they should do, what would you tell them?
First of all, have a little watch of the sport. Get in touch on our social media pages, and we have a link tree, which I cannot remember off the top. Thinking about it all the way up in the train. But if there is an expression of interest form, if people just pop in there, fill out some details, I'll actually get in contact with them and invite them along to a session. You can come along, meet some of the younger players if you're under 18, some of the parents if you're a parent, if you're an older player maybe has lost a leg through accident, injury, illness. You can come along and meet some of the senior players and ask some questions, and as quickly as possible, I'd say, get on some crutches and give it a go, because you know there is good support there, and you'll enjoy it. I don't know many that haven't.
No, I think that's the one thing everyone who's kind of tried, whether they're interested in football or not. Like, I don't come from a football background myself, and yet I've been playing the last, as I said, since nearly 2011, 2012. Mm. Like, it's not just this little tap about of a football, it's competitive. It gives you back that whole area in life that you might have missed out on, or, you know, especially for growing up, as I said, I was 11 when I lost my leg. So in terms of sports for me, other than wheelchair sports, there wasn't huge options there. I know it's different now, of course, but, you know, amputee football for me was, it's as physical as you're going to be. It's, you know, you're breaking crutches regularly at tournaments. I mean, we got away with 2 to 3 sets of crutches spare every tournament. You know, it is. It's as Chris said. It's blood, sweat, and tears goes into it, and it's as competitive as any other football game is going to be.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it before the interview today, and I've seen some of the games before, because it'll often come up on social media. You know, when you guys are away competing at things, and it is like, it's rough and tumble as it comes, and even just the skill. You know, it's one thing to run along a line, but to navigate the crutches, navigate other people's crutches, the upper body strength that's required in it, as well as the coordination. Like, it's so fascinating to watch, and really, really, like, fun to watch as well. So I would definitely say to people, I know the FAI, I think, have some videos up on their website, to check it out and give it a watch, because, as you say, it's sport, and these international tournaments are hard to come by at times, so it's good to give as much support as you can. In terms of the, I suppose, future for the sport, or how you would like to see it maybe develop a little bit more, where do you see it coming? Do you see a more regular club scene setting up? Is it more a sense of we want to win the World Cup? You know, what are the aims and goals?
I think one of the big things for us is you often hear a lot in sport about you know leaving the jersey in a better way than it was given to you. We want to make sure that there's still a jersey there to hand on. So our big challenge is making sure that people are aware of the sport, that we can recruit new players. There's more people coming in and giving the sport a go, so it's a sustained delivery. There's growth in Europe and worldwide now with the European Amputee Football Federation and the World Amputee Football Federation in terms of female participation in the sport. We have a couple of female players, both at academy and at development level, and we'd encourage more females to play. We want to see that female programme grow. We want to see the international team grow and the academy grow. But also, I suppose, where we have a lot of our players at the moment, we have three teams in the National League, Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians and Cork City. And there's a whole sort of west, northwest coast where we're not getting a lot of people coming in at the moment. Mm. There's a few players there, but we'd like to see that National League programme grow a little bit and have a platform for them at a local level to connect into to amputee football. So I think that the challenge and the goals for us is to see more people play and more people go and understand what it is.
It is interesting that the problems are similar to non-amputee football in the sense that, you know, the West, Northwest, it can be difficult to get people out in general to play football along there. It's probably much more GA, maybe like a little bit of rugby country. And it's interesting that the problems exist no matter what the divide is.
Yeah. No, it's right across the board.
Yeah. And for you, Neil, like you talked a little bit there about leaving the jersey in a better place, but what was that moment like for you the first time that you did put on an international jersey? Did you feel the weight of it or was it just excitement?
Yes and no. Like there is, of course, when you're putting on a jersey, there is that bit of weight to it. But in fairness to the team that's there and the team that has always been there, the one thing that's at the core of all of them is they're all really nice lads. They're all just genuinely looking to support each other. And that's, I think, the one thing that stands out about aside from the football. It is genuinely a team outside of the football. There's not a single person on the team you couldn't ring at any hour or text them at any hour, regardless of what, you know, their family situation looks at home, and ask them for help, they would be there. You know, in fairness, it's a very good community in it that's there, you know, from coaching staff the whole way down. It's a good culture overall. So while there is the weight of playing for your country and, you know, your family and friends are watching games, you know, there is going to be that. But I think for as much as it's an honour to do it, it doesn't feel quite as big when you have that kind of support and team around you. Mm. I think even just touching on for new players, as Chris mentioned about recruits or anything, getting out on crutches even, when you start off at first with amputee football, the crutches are like, it's like walking on ice. It's really awkward, it's clumsy, it takes time. And what can happen, I think, is some people come out and see everyone running around on the crutches and tackling each other and they think, oh my God, I can never get to that level. Each one of us who have started in the amputee football started at that level. We all started where we look like Bambi on ice, and we've grown into this from our training. As I say, whether that's 3 or 4 sessions now, you know, we're doing a week, that builds up over, you know, 5 to 10 years of training. So for anyone new coming into it, while I would encourage them to look at the videos and see it, don't put yourself off that if you're thinking, oh my God, I can't run around on crutches like that. Of course you can't, because you haven't done it yet. Mm. Give yourself the time to step into it and let the lads who are there, myself, Chris, or other lads who are on the team, just give you that support and show you what it's all about as well. Like, it takes time.
I was going to say, it really sounds like there's a lot of support there for anyone who is interested in getting involved.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, it's definitely we're not short of in the amputee football is support. And it's not from a kind of pally-pally of, oh, we all have one leg. It is just, they're genuinely nice people in the sport across, you know, going even on international trips and everything. A lot of teams you meet and all, it's just genuinely nice people who want to just play football. And that's what it's all about, it's playing football.
And do you have a favourite moment in the green jersey?
Oh, I want to say my first goal against Germany would probably be my favourite, but I know that was then hindered by being taken off in an ambulance. So it's probably that match for me. We played really well against Germany. We did everything we were supposed to do, and it paid off for us. So that's definitely one of my highlights.
How many goals have you racked up?
Only 2, I think, now, yeah.
Yeah.
Important goals, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, you have Amber Barrett there behind you, you know, one important goal in Scotland, that's all that she needed to be remembered as a hero for the rest of her life.
Helping everyone else get their goals.
Yeah.
Quantity.
As Rory Murphy would say, the pre assists, you know.
And what, Chris, is the landscape of sport in Ireland for people who maybe are in a wheelchair or are on crutches, have had an amputation? What does that look like? I know you said you worked over in Wales and the sport side of things as well, but where do we rank, I suppose, in a European sense?
Across sports?
Just in general, yeah.
I think in Ireland, you know, in general, we do things quite well and we are quite inclusive and quite inclusive in our sports. And there's a really good network around Ireland with the Sports Inclusion Disability Officers that promote sport at a local level. The FAI do it quite well through the Football for All programme. So we're quite lucky in our sport. And we're quite fortunate that we have good support from our national governing body. We're affiliated to them. We have benefits in terms of financial support, but also in terms of support from staff and stuff where we've gone away and the support structure that's gone around it. We've also sort of I suppose one of the things of being affiliated with the FAI is the players that represent Ireland get in the same international caps that the senior internationals and all through the FAI get. So it really makes it quite meaningful. So, you know, in Ireland, the landscape's quite good. And we've had people that have had experience of other sports that have come into our sport and see the benefits of it. Because I think, you know, we can sit here and we can talk about, you know, being competitive and representing Ireland. But sometimes, you know, what we forget to say ourselves is the health benefits of playing sport. If you've lost a leg and you've got one limb that's going to do you for the rest of your life, well, football increases bone density, increases muscle mass, it helps with mobility, the running, your heart health is improved by that. So the support structures that are around sport in Ireland are there to keep people healthy and well, and I think our sport delivers on that quite a lot. So if anyone was listening, you know, that's one of the big benefits that you'll get from being involved. Your health is your wealth, and I think our sport and the support structure around it helps to deliver that.
Mm. I'm going to say you did a PhD in football and this side of things.
I'm on the back end of that now.
Yeah.
So my research is.
That's good that I haven't not been calling you a doctor throughout the whole interview.
Yeah, there's a whole journey ahead with that. The finish line's in sight, but it's a good bit off in the distance. No, I suppose my research is around scaling up a men's health initiative through football, a project that exists in Dublin and Limerick. Called Football Cooperative. I'm part of a bigger research group which has, you know, has sort of identified that there's a return on investment for initiatives like that. There's a number of health benefits, physical, mental, social health benefits, and my research is specifically developing a strategy to scale that up to population benefits. So it's really lured in by the football part of it, and that's sort of it's been able to keep me on track. It's nice to be able to work in an area that you're quite interested in as well.
Is there anything that you've discovered over the course of doing it that surprised you or kind of made you kind of sit back and rethink everything that you've been doing over the last couple of years?
In the PhD?
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose one of the great parts of it was I was able to collect data in Denmark, Germany, through partners in Belgium and a few other places, and really getting an international perspective on what they do in recreational football, how there's so many things that are very similar to Ireland, but so many things that are quite different as well, and learning about what works really well and the strategies they use to promote recreational football and promote their sport has been really really helpful, and stuff I've probably brought into my role with Amputee Football as well, because I'm working on the development end of things as well, and I suppose some of the structures that they have, I've maybe pinched a few ideas from that. So I've been quite fortunate to be exposed to those environments.
And Neil, I know you mentioned World Cup coming up, just finishing Nations League. What's next for the Irish team?
I mean, as I said, looking forward to the World Cup. It's a big challenge.
When does it kick off?
July 31st, I think.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
July. Day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a First day of competition is last day of July next year.
Yeah. So that'll be kind of what we're focused on now. I mean, from a player point of view, it'll be getting the fitness ready, getting the tactical side of it down. It'll be driven mostly by that. Of course, then, as any football team would have when you travel like that, there's the costs and the expenses that we'll have to look at. Well, I say we, but committee and stuff like that we'll have to look at. So it'll be a big drive, it'll be a big push. Of course, it's getting the recruitment in and getting players in and making sure the players that are there can commit to training for the next number of months, you know, till we get there. Which, again, as we mentioned, people have their own family lives outside as well, whether that's young kids at home or just, you know, playing for the last number of years and are just getting a bit older. That will have its own kind of implications, but it'll be just solely focused on that. I know from the committee side, as I said, they'll have their own drives and stuff about recruiting and about developing the development side and the juniors as well. So I suppose there'll be a few different moving parts in the next 12 months anyway. But for me as a player, it'd be focused on the World Cup.
Where is it being hosted?
Costa Rica.
Oh, very nice.
Don't know where in Costa Rica after that.
No.
All you need to know is that you're going to Costa Rica.
Abroad, that's...
Yeah.
I'm doing well there.
And how big of a squad travels to something like that?
Again, that'll all depend on kind of from a coaching staff as well of who's around, what sports we have in place at that time. I think we'd be looking, is it 16 is normally for the...
Maybe between 14 and 16 maximum, which would be bringing three goalkeepers and a number of outfield players. It's usually about three goalkeepers just in case.
Mm.
It's a hard dynamic to manage in the squad with because you can only put one goalkeeper in. Because the games are so thick and fast and there's not a major amount of time to recover, trying to bring as many players into the squad is definitely the way to go.
Mm. Well, guys, thank you very much for coming in. It's been a really interesting conversation. Just a reminder for people, if they do want to get involved, to check it out on your social medias, and there's a forum there to express interest.
Yes, yeah. If you follow us on or come in and have a look on our social media and go along to our Linktree, there's an express your interest form there. Fill it in and I'll be straight on to you. Right down to a session.
Exactly.
And if you know of anybody who might be in your family tree or somebody that might not be listening to, point them in the direction, and you know we'll reach out and try and support them to maybe come and give it a go.
And the main hubs, are they Dublin and Cork are kind of the main hubs at the moment?
Dublin and Cork with the National League. We've often trained in Kerr in Tipperary, which has been a bit more of an accessible route for people coming from the West and Dublin and Cork. And we're negotiating where we're going to land our training sessions in the build-up to the World Cup. So I can't say exactly where they're going to be, but I suppose 50% of them will probably be in Dublin anyway around Abbottstown, because it's nice to train in the backdrop of your national association's facilities.
Yeah, and there's great pitches and general facilities out in Abbottstown, and you're surrounded by lots of other sports as well, which is nice as well to be in that ecosystem.
It's a lovely campus, and I think when new players come in and new parents that come in with their kids, it's got that wow factor as well when you drive around the National Sports Campus. We'll accommodate some sessions there, but we have to look after the guys that are outside of Dublin as well.
Brilliant. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming in. Settle In is brought to you by Guinness 00, and you can check out this conversation wherever you get your podcast.
Settle In on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 00.